16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Take the dress. Most people remember it as an optical illusion that went viral, asking everyone on the planet, is this dress blue and black or white and gold? Turns out, that story was way bigger than just an optical illusion. It's a cautionary tale about the decline of clickbait sites, the rise of algorithms and internet polarization, and the end of fun on the internet. Seriously, and that's just one story. We're giving every character their 16th minute. So listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Survivor's back, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist, a new co-host, the winner of Survivor 45, D. Valladares.
Hi!
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Coming to you from New York City, the only city in America, it's The Daily Show! Tonight, CPAC's Weird Weekend, Senator Tim Scott, and Natalie Emanuel. This is The Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
A super fun show for you tonight. It is jam-packed. Donald Trump wishes he was Hitler. Your favorite streaming services are having a baby, and Joe Biden is the best or worst president in history. Plus, Republican Senator Tim Scott is joining us on the show, and Natalie Emanuel is here to talk about her brand new movie. So let's do this, people. Let's jump straight into today's headline. Before we get into the big stories, let's catch up on a few other things that are going on in the world. First up, some international news. New Zealand may be getting a new name. Yes, yeah, Maori politicians have launched a campaign to restore one of the country's original names, Aotearoa, right? Yeah, and I think we can all be honest, like, they didn't put a lot of thought into naming it New Zealand in the first place. Yeah, like, yeah, colonizers were so late. This is New Zealand, there's New England, New York. Zero effort. It's like Pete Davidson calling his next girlfriend New Kim. Terrible. It's not gonna work. Meanwhile, in health news, officials in New York say that hundreds of people in the state may be infected with polio because so many people are unvaccinated. Yeah. So I guess New York is back in the 1950s. And you know, I'll be honest with you, I don't care anymore. Yeah, I don't. Polio, you wanna come for me? Come. Come. Yeah, you're gonna have to fight for space in my body with COVID and monkeypox. Just going on, just go at it. Just go at it hard. Oh, and in politics, according to a new book about the Trump White House, President Trump complained that his national security team wasn't loyal enough to him, saying, quote, "Why can't you be like the German generals in World War II? Yeah, that's right. Fox News was out there every day like, these liberals are so over the top, always comparing Trump to Hitler. Meanwhile, Trump was going, why won't people treat me more like Hitler? Why not? It actually got even more alarming than that. Later in the same meeting, he told his generals to find the Ark of the Covenant before Indiana Jones got his hands on it. No, I'm joking, but that's not even the real story. So this is the crazy part. After Trump went off about how his generals should be as loyal as Hitler's were, General Kelly's response to him was, you do know that they tried to kill Hitler 3 times and almost pulled it off. And I don't know why, but I feel like that information didn't change Trump's opinion of the German generals. Like knowing Trump, he was probably like, those losers tried to kill Hitler 3 times and they choked like a dog. Like a dog. Couldn't get it done. You know who was able to kill Hitler in the first try? Hitler. It's called leadership, people. Leadership. But anyway, let's move on to some of the bigger news stories of the day. Starting off with President Joe Biden, who had himself one hell of a weekend. First of all, he finally tested negative again for COVID and was allowed to leave quarantine for the first time in 18 days. Yeah, so he's back and as good as new, or whatever he was when he went in. And 18 days is a long time in quarantine, but I'm sure he'll get right back into the swing of things, you know? Because, yeah, being president is a lot like, you know, riding a bike. Oh, Joe, no, don't do it! Don't do it! So, the good news for Biden is that he's out of quarantine. And even more good news for Biden is that he's now in the history books.
The historic vote in the Senate.
Major, major victory tonight for the Democrats and for our planet.
This morning, Democrats triumphant.
Every member of my caucus is elated about what happened because we've changed the world in a way that you rarely get an opportunity to do that.
Passing a sweeping climate, healthcare, and economic package after 22 straight hours of dusk to dawn work over the weekend. Vice President Kamala Harris casting the tie-breaking vote for Democrats to pass the bill, which boasts climate spending and billions in energy investments. Also reducing prices of prescription drugs by letting Medicare negotiate directly with pharmaceutical companies.
A major legislative victory for Democrats in Congress and for the Biden White House. Suddenly, he is one of the most consequential legislative presidents since LBJ in his first 2 years in office.
Yeah, don't look now, people, but all of a sudden, Sleepy Joe has himself a pretty fat stack of accomplishments. Yeah, in just the past few weeks, he'll have done lower prescription drug prices, the biggest investment in green energy ever, healthcare for veterans exposed to burn pits, investment in computer chip production, and he kept the leader of Al-Qaeda while he was sunbathing. Think about it. This is insane. You realize what this means? If he keeps this up, his approval rating is gonna shoot all the way up to like 39%. And he did all of this with COVID. I bet right now the White House doctors are trying to figure out how to give COVID back to the president again. Come on, guys. If we get him infected, maybe he'll end the war in Ukraine. And by the way, I know this is weird, but have you noticed that Joe Biden seems to be the most successful whenever he disappears? No, I know it's weird, but like during the campaign, right? He went and he hid in the basement and nobody saw him for months. Everyone was like, Where's Joe Biden? And then out of nowhere, they announced that he was the president, yeah? Remember, he even came out on election night and was just like, wait, really? Okay, yeah, I guess. What, me? Then now, gas prices, crazy. Congress, stuck. Inflation, wild. Joe Biden gets COVID, disappears into the basement again. And then when he comes out, they tell him that not only is he still the president, he is now one of the greatest presidents in the history of presidents. Gas prices went down, Congress is getting things done, the Choco Taco is coming back from the dead. So I don't know what's in that basement, but whatever it is, it's working. In fact, I want that basement to be president, basement 2024. And by the way, it's not like this bill was easy for Biden to get, remember that. Because it's a 50-50 Senate, right? The Democrats can't afford to lose a single vote. So first, they spent a year convincing Joe Manchin to get on board. And he was like, look, I'll back your climate change stuff, but only if you let me squeeze baby seals to see if there's oil inside. And the Democrats were like, sure, yeah, whatever. But then at the last minute, they had to convince Kyrsten Sinema. And she was like, okay, I'll sign on. But only if you let me squeeze hedge fund managers to see if there's campaign donations inside. And I guess it worked. So, let's move on. Because no matter what you think about Joe Biden's accomplishments, we can all agree that he stole the election in 2020. Yeah, it was a landslide victory for Donald Trump, but sneaky Joe Biden hacked into the Matrix and turned all the voting machines black. No one denies this. And on January 6th, a group of patriots tried to explain all of this to Mike Pence's neck, but instead of listening, the US government has been throwing them in jail. And they've been locked away in those cold cells ever since with only their fur hats to keep them warm. So over the weekend, conservatives gathered in Texas, all right, to raise awareness for just how badly the January 6th rioters are being treated. And the way they did this was they held a very special tribute that is very moving and not at all hilarious.
The insurrection fallout is front and center at CPAC. This year's most buzzed about booth is this, a fake jail cell. What you're watching actually happened at CPAC. It features a convicted January 6th rioter doing performance art in a cage wearing an orange jumpsuit.
Visitors were offered headsets so they could listen to interviews with jailed January 6th defendants while watching the actor weep. Some viewers wept along with him. Others threw money into the cage. Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene entered the cell to pray with him.
Okay, wait. Wait, okay, just wait. Help me understand the logic here. Marjorie Taylor Greene is praying for a fake prisoner? No, this is a real thing. She's like, Siri, who is this lady? Like, America, you understand? This is a person who's actually part of running your country. She's in there mourning with a fake, praying for, like, how does she function in the world? It's a fake prison. She must have the hardest time at Broadway shows. They killed Hamilton! Ah! Ah! I mean, I guess in her defense, this actor in the lobby of the CPAC convention hall really committed to the role. Because apparently, he spent hours in that jail cell weeping the whole time, just weeping. Which in a way is a powerful performance art, because isn't that what conservatism has turned to in America, right? It's just people in MAGA hats acting like they're victims. There's fewer white people now than there used to be. But we still have all the power. By the way, the part that made me laugh the hardest was how people were throwing money into the cage. Like, what is that? Is this like the only way they know how to interact with art is the same way they interact with strippers, you know? Just like, your freedom has been stolen from you. Shake that ass. Just shake that ass. Now, you would think a story like this couldn't get any crazier. But truly, the best part of the story is this actor who played the defendant was an actual rioter on January 6th who reportedly avoided a prison sentence by snitching on the other rioters. Yeah. So just so you understand, this dude is pretending to be a prisoner that he helped send to prison. Which is insane. You snitched on your fellow rioters. They go to jail. And now you're out in the streets crying like, man, I wish there was something I could have done to stop them from going to jail. I wish there's something I could have done. This is wild. All right, let's move on to some major news out of the entertainment world. There is no denying that there are far too many streaming services out there these days, people. It's just too much. There's Hulu, there's Netflix, there's, you know, Prime Video, Apple TV Plus, Disney Plus. It's getting out of hand. It's getting out of hand. Especially when Paramount Plus gives you everything that you need in one place. You know, there's Champions League, there's RuPaul's Drag Race, there's The Daily Show, there's South Park, there's Star Trek, The Daily Show, Beavis and Butthead, and of course, The Daily Show. What else do you need? So yes, there are way too many services, but luckily, soon, there's gonna be one less.
Soon, you'll get a two-for-one deal on streaming. HBO Max and Discovery Plus will merge next year. Subscribers will have various options between HBO's scripted entertainment and Discovery's reality-based programming.
It comes as HBO Max struggles with performance and customer issues. The CEO of Warner Brothers says Discovery Plus has better technology and will become the core of the new service.
No, this is enough. How many times is HBO going to change its name, huh? It was HBO Go, and then it was HBO Now, and it's HBO Max. Like, at this point, I feel like they're just messing with us. Next month, they're gonna be like, our new name is HBO Bitch Ass Says What? What? So yeah, Warner Brothers, Discovery, and HBO are merging everything into one giant company. I know that's gonna be weird, but I, for one, cannot wait to see how all of these biggest shows combine.
Coming up on House Hunters Westeros, Jerry is looking for a bigger space in King's Landing for his growing family.
Okay, first of all, a sword chair? What is this? Like 1527, guys? Let's switch that. Let's just switch that whole thing up, you know? Let's put in a cute ottoman, knock down some of these walls, yeah? Switch out the blood with a fresh coat of paint. Yeah, we gotta do that. Oh, we gotta fix the thermostat. That's way too hot, way too hot.
And also on the new HBO Discovery, stay tuned for the premiere of our new series, 90 Day Succession.
To fundamentally alter the nature of the family on my wedding day? You have any conception of how goddamn selfish you are?
Lady, I just want a green card, huh? All right, that's it for the headlines. But before we go to a quick break, let's check in on the stock market with our finance expert, Michael Costa, everybody! This is wild, Michael. Mergers, people coming together. What is happening in the market today?
I am crushing it. I mean, I am crushing it. So
you,
I mean,
always are, man.
Yeah, you're crushing it too.
What?
You know, you're crushing it. And you're an excellent boss, you know?
Oh, yeah, thank you.
And I'm loyal to you, Trevor. Unlike those Trump generals, you know? You're my Hitler, Trevor. I'm serious.
No, I'm serious.
When you look at Trevor Noah, I want you to think of Adolf Hitler, okay?
I don't think that's doing what you think it is. I appreciate it. Let's just go.
I got a hot tip for you.
Yeah, thank
you. I got a hot tip for you. Make some money. Like, I make some money. I got a hot tip for you. Pay attention. So behind me right here, this is the Warner Brothers stock after the streaming merger between HBO Max and Discovery Plus. And what you want to pay attention to here, okay? Actually, just for a second, that story about President Biden. Wow, he's just accomplishing so much. Crushing it with COVID, right? Apparently you can get a lot done with COVID. I mean, for me, I'm crushing this segment and I've got COVID too. You know what I'm saying? I'm just kidding. I have polio, but let's get back to the chart. As a financial expert, I'm here to offer this. Mergers are tricky, all right? What's the most dangerous part of driving, right? Merging. I can't tell you how many times I've just plowed into people, right? What's the worst part of a birthday party? Merging separate groups of friends, you know? Work friends, college friends, both groups have stories you don't want the other side to know about. Business merging is no different, okay? Mergers, Trevor, they're a lot like relationships, right? At first, it's two single companies just having fun, and you're like, hey, maybe we should have fun together, you know? Combine our assets, like a marriage. In fact, that's why it's called a merger, because merge sounds so much like merge. Okay? But next thing you know, after the merge, the arguing starts. Are we HBO Discovery? Are we Discovery HBO? How many subsidiaries are we gonna have? Because I want one, but she wants three. Where are we gonna spend the holidays? Why does Discovery Plus keep f***ing my best friend, okay? And then that's when this happens,
Mike,
Trevor.
Michael, what? I think you're getting off track.
Okay.
Can you just give us the hot tip,
you're
please?
Right. Okay. Hot tip. Oh, yeah. You should get tested for polio. Honestly, I think I have it. So.
Well, thank you so much for that. Michael Costa, everybody! You should get it checked out. Don't go away, because when we come back, Republican Senator Tim Scott will be joining me right here on the show. We'll be right back.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Korra on The Legend of Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Zuko on The Last Airbender and General Iroh on The Legend of Korra. Each week, we'll recap and discuss another episode of The Last Airbender.
I don't know if we've ever talked about it, but...
Amazing guests stop by, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat all things Avatarverse.
Are we saying that this is possible in the Avatar universe?
Varney, we gotta spread the word. Now fans can also check out our weekly video pods too by subscribing to the official Avatar YouTube channel.
That's a lot of fire, isn't it?
That's right, we're on video this season, everybody! So, whether you're a super fan with encyclopedic knowledge or you're brand new to this incredible world,
it's Fire Nation time, Book of Fire. Let's go! Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on Apple Podcasts
or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Daily Show. My first guest is a Republican from South Carolina serving in the United States Senate. He's here to talk about his new memoir, America, A Redemption Story. Please welcome Senator Tim Scott. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
How are you?
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
It's good to have you here. It's very rare that Republicans drop in when they are still in office and not like on their way out. This is fun. No, it really is because, you know, you've always been somebody who comes on the show and we talk about everything, and I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
This time is a little different.
Yes.
You've written a book about your life. And honestly, there's a lot in this book that I didn't know about you as a human being. You know, and let's start in the beginning.
Certainly.
In many ways, the book talks about your journey of how you got to where you got to today.
Absolutely.
You know, many people have referred to you as many different things. The unicorn, yeah. You know, the lone black senator in the Republican Party. People have referred to you as the outlier. But what's really interesting in the book is you talk about how you got there with family who were also Democrats. Talk me through that experience of, you know, what it was like being in a family where people were voting differently.
Absolutely. Well, I think the most important part of my story really is the devastation of divorce. Being raised by a single mom, mm-hmm. who worked 16 hours a day, 3 days a week, and 8 hours a day, 2 days a week as a nurse's aide, just changing bedpans and enrolling patients. So seeing my mother work her butt off to try to keep food on the table, and then moving in with my grandparents, my grandfather born in 1921 in Sally, South Carolina,
yeah.
Having to get off the sidewalk when white folks were coming. Just the humiliation and the devastation that he experienced, and that passed down to my mother, and then it impacted me too. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we forget to tell both sides of the story when mm-hmm. we're having conversations. I wanted to make sure that people had a full perspective of my journey to becoming who I am, because much of it was built on the shoulders of people who paid a very high price for you and I to have this conversation. And sometimes we forget to say thank you to those who went before us.
Right, right, right. Yeah. On the shoulders of giants.
I mean, absolutely.
You know, it's interesting that you say telling all sides of the story, because you talk about your father very early on in the book.
Yes.
And what I appreciate is how you talk about the negative impact he had on you,
absolutely.
But you appreciate all of the positive as well. You talk about how he comes back from fighting a war for America.
Yes.
And yet America doesn't want him. People spit at him. He doesn't get treated as a first-class citizen. What impact did that have on you growing up knowing this?
You know, I learned a lot more about my father's story while I was writing the book. Truly, to tell you the truth, my father and I was not close for about 30 years.
Right.
After the divorce, we went the separate ways, and it was in my late 20s, early 30s when I first started getting back with him. Truth is that the more I understood about the pain and the misery and the devastation that happened during the Vietnam conflict for him, mm-hmm. as well as coming back as a black Vietnam veteran.
Right.
Very, very, very painful experience. And then the altercations that he had with other members of the service just because he was black, and how that painted and stained him, and how that caused him to spiral some, and being the recipient of that, you see it differently. Mm-hmm. As you grow older, you get 20/20, looking backwards. And so my father is now a good man, a solid man that I have much respect for, and having walked that journey together has made me such a better person. Mm. And it gives me a perspective that I would not have had I not taken the time to listen. Because sometimes when we go through pain and suffering, we put our finger towards a person we think caused us that pain, and we literally turn our backs. I think sometimes the best thing we can do is listen even to the people we feel like hurt us. Huh. There's a scripture in Matthew 5:44 says to love your enemies, to pray for those who persecute uh-huh, you. And uh-huh. I gotta say that South Carolina, we've had more than our share. And I talk about Mother Emanuel Church shooting.
Right.
Those amazing people, forgave the killer, the racist, who walked into the church, sat through a Bible study. And when you hear stories like that, and you understand the magnitude of their power to bring light into a dark place, the least I could do is learn to listen to people who may disagree with me.
You've always done that. You know, you've always had conversations with people you don't agree with. You've often faced criticism as well. You know, many people have said, how can you be a black man in the Republican Party. Look at what the Republican Party is doing. Look at the policies that the Republican Party enacts. And some people haven't been, you know, haven't said it to you in the nicest way. You talk in the book about how people called you Uncle Tim when you responded to the president's address. How do you reconcile that narrative, or how do you reconcile the conflict of being a black man in a party that is predominantly white and black people are predominantly Democrats, and saying no, I can still believe in this and not be a race traitor, which I don't believe in any way, but I'm
Well, Trevor, I'm gonna break news here. You ready?
I'm ready.
I think the black community is a conservative community. So I think I'm just being consistent with who I am. Let me give you a couple of examples of policy positions that I think the most people don't understand or appreciate or have ever even heard, that while we were in the majority from 2016 to 2020, we invested more money in historically black colleges and universities than any other time in American history. We made the funding for HBCUs permanent for the first time in American history. We put $1 billion in the middle of the pandemic, specifically targeting HBCUs. My office, we led the charge on sickle cell anemia research and passed legislation to make sure that it would be easier. Unemployment, 2016 to 2020, we had the lowest unemployment in the history of the country for African Americans, Hispanics, Asians, a 70-year low for women. We created 7 million jobs, two-thirds were African-Americans and Hispanics. So my point is that when you think about the policy positions that I have fought for, not to even talk about opportunity zones, the fact is that as a sitting conservative Republican, I fought for those issues that had the greatest impact in the communities where I come from, because it's like common sense.
But here's the thing that I find interesting. And, and by the way, you are not an outlier in doing this. I find it interesting to see how American politicians choose to measure time or effect, because what you said was true. The 2016 to 2020, there was a man by the name of Barack Obama who was president up until 2016. Yes. And as you know, in economics, effects can take a while, right? You've heard of the name, right?
Yes.
And so, so here's the thing.
I have, here's the thing.
I don't think... I don't think we've had conversations.
I'm not accusing you of
betraying anybody. I'm not accusing you of that. I think sometimes what becomes confusing for people is how it seems like the Republican Party and conservatives at large seem to have an idea of, victimhood. Let's put it this way.
Yes.
So I'll see people saying, oh, we're sick and tired of people talking about racism. That's over. We're sick and tired of people talking about oppression. That's over. Minorities need to, right?
Yeah.
But what it seems like, and you'll tell me how you see it, is it seems like oftentimes in order for people of color to be accepted into the Republican Party, they have to ignore all of the systemic things that happen to them in the country.
Right.
And then the people who are in the Republican Party go, we're the victims, we're the real people being oppressed, we're being replaced, we're being oppressed, this is what's actually happening because we are white. And I find that, do you not find that there's a weird disparity at times?
I hear what you're saying, but can I point out one thing?
Of course.
Do y'all mind? Don't ask a question you don't know the answer to, the people you don't know. My bad. In my book, one thing you'll learn very quickly, I don't sidestep the issue of race at all.
You don't. That's why I said with you, I agree with that.
And,
right?
I talk about the 20 plus times that I've been stopped the last two decades for just driving while black. I talk about the race riot that happened at the high school I was going to attend when I was in the eighth grade. I talk about the challenges that so many people in our community has faced because of the color of our skin. I talk about the economic realities. I talk about the justice system. I work, as you know, on police reform. So the truth of the matter is that I think you have to be comfortable in your own skin wherever you are. And if you have to betray or deny a part of your existence, don't do it. And I refuse to allow any party affiliation to stop me from being what I'm going to be when I leave and what I was before I came.
And you do that, I will say, you do that honestly.
Yeah.
You do that honestly beyond just black.
Yes,
You talk about this in the book, for instance. You were one of the senators who said Donald Trump, in trying to overturn the election, what he did was unconstitutional. Yes. You know, you talk about January 6th. I feel like even in the book, when you're telling the story of January 6th, you do a really good job of placing the blame at the feet of the people who conducted the insurrection.
Yes, yes.
It seems like there is a looming absence, though, you know, it's a glaring absence of Trump's name in it. It seems like at times you are, you know, and I don't mean it in a bad way at all, but it seems like you are trying to thread the needle, you know, of saying what happened, but then not saying why it happened.
Does
that make sense?
It does. Now, tell the truth. Praise the Lord. Yes, yes. I like that. So it is called The Daily Show with Trevor Noah and not Tim Scott. So I assume the audience is going to go with you.
I'm being funny. No, I'm with you.
I mean, I know you're a comedian. I'm trying my best, you know. I'm working. Give a brother a break, right?
I give you all the breaks. You know that, yes.
But here's my point, though. I was actually in the building.
And you talk about it in the
rolling
book.
My sleeves up, preparing to fight for my life.
Right.
So when I put the blame on the people who were coming after me, mm-hmm. I put the blame squarely where I believe it belongs. And that's what you hear in my recount of the issue. When I say that at the end of that day on January the 6th, we, the United States Senate, both Republicans and Democrats, went back out and performed our duty to affirm that President Biden has won the election, mm-hmm. we did our job. So I'm not actually sugarcoating or skirting or pivoting away from an issue. I'm actually not making it more political than it has to be.
But then let me ask you this.
Certainly.
Okay, many people have floated the idea, and I'm not asking about everybody. Yes. And my mom would say, I'm only asking about you right now. I would like to know then, if you were asked to run as Donald Trump's vice president, would you accept that?
That's a good question. I was. I'm going to pivot.
At least you're honest. Okay. At least you're honest.
So, let me tell you what I'm saying. Here's the truth. When you're up for re-election to the United States Senate, the first goal is to win. So once you win, then you look at the options that are left and make a decision on what is possible. And so for me, at this point in my career, the only thing I'm asking for mm-hmm. are the people in South Carolina to give me a chance mm-hmm. to be reelected.
Right. And they do love you. You served your state well. You know, you talk about your beginnings in the book, and you talk about the commitment that you have to your country. And people admire it in the way that you've served, whether they agree with you or not. Talking about South Carolina, though,
yes, sir.
I would love to know how you see the state and its positioning as it pertains to some of the issues facing America today, one of the biggest being abortion. For many, many years, people said Roe v. Wade was settled. Yeah. People saw the Supreme Court flip in a way that some senators even felt betrayed. You know, I won't ask you to comment on the Supreme Court, but what I will ask you to comment on is South Carolina as a whole right now. Many senators, many lawmakers have said, it's up to the states. Let the states decide. Yeah. We see states are starting to decide. Kansas, Indiana, etc. South Carolina has a bill that is being discussed that would prohibit people from giving women information on getting an abortion, even if they were to do it in a state that did decide to still have it. So where do you stand on that issue then?
Well, I'll say I have not read the legislation because I'm a United States senator, not a state senator, so I don't have the information to answer.
I agree. I understand you don't want to comment on something.
Not that I think I'm going to ever satisfy your audience on this issue.
But
the truth is, though, that you're asking me about a bill I have not even seen, nor have I.
So then let me ask you. Based not on that bill, but on the issue, rather.
Should people be able to get information about the decisions that they want to make?
Yes.
The answer is yes.
Okay, so if they were restricting it, and I'm not saying they are, then you would not be for that.
I think that people making a profound decision mm-hmm. should have all the information, pros and cons.
Right. Let's talk about the journey to the presidency. I've been on The Daily Show for a few years now, and there's something I've noticed, and that is when people write memoirs... It generally means that they might be eyeing a run at the presidency. So, with 2024 coming up? I know you've been asked this in many, many different ways. I'm not going to ask you, would you run, would you not run? You're going to tell me, well, Trevor, right now we just got to focus on the midterms and you're the most important thing. I know that. I get that. Right?
Actually, I wasn't going to say that.
Okay.
I was going to say that we should focus on the next Friday night like we were in high school football players. But yeah, you get the point. Yeah,
right.
Yes, yes,
so,
yes.
So let me ask you this then,
yes,
Robert.
Yes, sir. Yes.
What would you do differently if you were elected president of the United States? What would you do differently from a Donald Trump presidency? What would you do differently from a Joe Biden presidency? What is the difference that you would bring?
I honestly think that America's the greatest country on earth. We are the solution, not the problem. If we are going to focus our attention on making America a better country, thank all three of your people up there. I really appreciate that.
I think it's just in the moment people are struggling. In the moment people are, for whatever reason.
I see. So if I were going to set an agenda, the first thing I would do is I would focus on the poorest zip codes in this country need really high quality education.
I agree.
I went to four different elementary schools by the fourth grade. I am serious about equipping our parents with all the options they need and improving the quality of our public education, whether that's here in New York City, the Success Academy does a fantastic job, or in Charleston, we have one of the top 50 public high schools in all of the country. So there's a way for us to be able to provide great incentives for our kids to continue along the path to a better education.
Is that your way of saying privatizing education?
Let me say it differently.
Because this is the thing I've noticed in America. In the book, what I do like is that you talk about the impacts that education made both negatively and positively in your life. You know,
absolutely.
Like where it impacted you. And there's something I did notice in the book is your journey cannot be separated from the journey that America had. You cannot separate it from a world where America believed in investing in America, where it wasn't those kids can choose those charter schools or those systems or those, do you get what I'm saying? It seemed like this was, you're a product of that world.
And we spend $760 billion as a country on public education, K through 12.
But teachers are still broke.
Listen, if you're, so, and your point is a good one. In the Department of Education in Washington, D.C., the average employee at the Department of Education makes over $100,000 a year, where the teacher does not. So should we take some of the money that we're spending in Washington, D.C., and give it back to the state so that they can provide more money for teachers?
Well, you could just take it away from wars.
That's true. But I would disagree.
You know?
Yeah. So I would say without any question, if you look at the breakdown of our budget around the country, you would see that we're spending $760 billion, on education. We spend about $800 billion on our discretionary defense. We spend about $1.1 trillion on Social Security, about $800 billion on Medicare, about $600 or so on Medicaid. So our domestic spending rivals any other place on earth. So it's not that we can't walk and chew gum. It's not that we can't provide for the primary defense of this nation and fund education. The truth is, in South Carolina and around the country, some of the poorest performing schools have about $24,000 per student. One of the blessings of this area in New York City is the charter schools, the Success Academy, very similar to what we have in Charleston, Meeting Street Academies, where you're seeing for less than half of the current student expenditures, you can get high quality education for the average student in the average place without privatizing it. And oh, by the way, I still support all choice. I mean, whatever it takes to improve education, I'm
all
for.
Choice?
Well, not all choice.
I'm not going to clip that. I know where you stand. Before I let you go,
You're pretty good at this job.
Thank you. I appreciate you coming. I really do.
You're discerning and you're hearing, and you're directional in your questions. I like this.
I try.
I understand.
It's what I do enjoy in the book is that it reminds me that you are a human being. I don't need to agree with you on everything to believe that you are a human being. And you talk about that in the book. You talk about the way people see you, the way you see people you don't agree with. One of the more touching parts of your book is when you talk about going with your grandfather for him to vote.
Yes.
And this was for him to vote for
2008.
Yeah, 2008.
Oh, yeah.
And he was going to vote for Barack Obama.
Absolutely.
And one of the volunteers at the polling station didn't trust that you would like let him vote because your grandfather couldn't read. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. So it's one of the most touching stories about my grandfather I could ever share. Going back to 1921, fast forward into 2008, thinking about a black man born in the Deep South,
mm-hmm.
with very, very few rights, if any at all, living long enough to see this country evolve far enough for the possibility of an African American being elected president of the United States. It was something he could not comprehend or imagine. So I take him to vote, as I always have. We're walking into the voting booth, and because he can't read, I always went into the booth with him, which is the way that we do it. And the young lady at the counter didn't think, me being a Republican, I'm going to honor my grandfather's wishes. And I just thought to myself, how sad is it that what she thinks of the human condition is so off? But my grandfather, having 100% faith in me, said, lady, please and thank you, shut up. And we went in there together.
This is my grandson.
Yeah, exactly. And so I said, granddad, I want you to memorize. My grandfather had almost a photographic memory.
Right.
I said, I want you to, Barack Obama, I want you to remember those words. So when you see it on TV, you know who you voted for.
There
will never be any question on what you did. And so he said, okay, Timmy. And he calls me Timmy. And so we push the button. And I said, okay, granddad, I want you to hit the vote button, the big green button, and vote. And walking out there, getting in the car, I've seen my grandfather cry twice. Once was when my grandmother died, April 29, 2001. And the second time was having the privilege and the responsibility of electing President Barack Obama.
It's a really, really fantastic book because I think it gives so much more complexity to who you are as a man. Thank you for joining me on the show.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Not everyone comes here and chats with me, so I always appreciate you. Thank you for coming here. Senator Scott's book, America, A Redemption Story, is available right now. Stay tuned, because when we come back, Natalie Emanuel will be joining me on the show. Don't go away. Thank you very much.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Korra on The Legend of Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Zuko on The Last Airbender and General Iroh on The Legend of Korra. Each week, we'll recap and discuss another episode of The Last Airbender.
I don't know if we've ever talked about it, but...
Amazing guests stop by, from creators to cast to super fans to chat all things Avatarverse.
Are we saying that this is possible in the Avatar universe?
Varney, we gotta spread the word. Now fans can also check out our weekly video pods too by subscribing to the official Avatar YouTube channel.
That's a lot of fire, isn't it?
That's right, we're on video this season, everybody! So, whether you're a super fan with encyclopedic knowledge or you're brand new to this incredible world,
it's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go! Listen to Avatar: Braving the Elements on Apple Podcasts
or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Daily Show. My next guest is Emmy-nominated actor Natalie Emanuel. She's here to talk about starring in the new film, The Invitation. Please welcome Natalie Emanuel. Welcome back to The Daily Show. Welcome in person, because the first thing I have to say is congratulations, because the last time we spoke was virtually.
Yes.
And that's when you were doing the new show was Die Hard with Kevin Hart, right?
That's right, yeah.
And since then, you got nominated for an Emmy for that role, so congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It feels like your journey has just been, you know, it's just on the up. You're enjoying yourself, whether it's comedy, whether it's drama, whether it's whatever. This is like a thriller.
It's a thriller, horror.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Yes. I like to challenge myself and try my hand at everything.
Watching this movie, I was like, this is a terrible mistake that your character has made. Because we saw a little bit in the clip. She goes to, like, for, you know, like a lavish event
like
in England.
Yeah, like a destination wedding with a long-lost relative who is a stranger. and goes alone. I mean, no. Like, that was her first mistake. So, I always joke that if it was me in this situation, that movie would have ended in the scene with my best friend, who's like, are you gonna go meet him? And we'd be like, nah. Because no, like,
if yeah. I got invited to a long-lost relative's event and I get there and then it's a bunch of people wearing masks, pulling out knives, I'd be like, yeah, this did not go as I intended.
Yeah.
This is not it. What I also found interesting was you are playing an American in the movie, but then everyone is English.
Yeah.
Is that like super weird for you? Because it's like you English playing an American with English people. Do you find that there's like parts of Natalie that change? Like, are there things like American Natalie does that English Natalie would never do?
I think American Natalie is probably a little more, she's probably a little louder, to be honest.
A little louder?
Yeah, like, I don't mean that to sound, like, negative. Like,
No, it's fine. You said it. Americans are loud. Said it now, Natalie. You've said it now, Natalie.
But we love that. I love that. I think that sometimes, like, my Britishness, yes. You know, often it's like, you know, you keep it sort of...
Yes, of course.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. And I think there's a freedom that comes with that accent and that I see with Americans. Like, they have no problem expressing themselves, expressing their opinions. And I love that. I wish I had more of that. So yes. I try to adopt it myself, not always successfully, but...
No, yeah. I think you do a great job of it. I loved seeing it in the character. I love seeing how you change. Before I let you go, there's one change that we have to speak about, and that's your hair. Right? It looks gorgeous.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I saw the video of you cutting your hair, and it was really emotional.
It was so emotional.
Because we've known you with your hair for so long, it's become a part of you, and people have even come up to you and said, like, thank you so much for having natural hair on a TV show, and what made you decide, you know what, I'm going to cut it? And not for a role, by the way, just for yourself.
It was for me. I think it had taken... For many years, I wanted to cut my hair, and I always found a reason not to. And I think some of it was fear. Some of it was like, you know, to be what is femininity or beauty or whatever. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm, often mm-hmm. We're kind of taught that you have to have long hair and it has to be a certain way. And I think I'd... also, like, there was a real pride in not changing my hair for the screen and on red carpets and doing, you know, glamorous looks with my natural texture and, you know, hair discrimination, all of that. It was a real kind of defiance that was in my hair and a celebration that was in my hair. And so when I decided to cut it, I wanted to just shed it. I wanted to let go of all the sort of complex feelings, but, you know, start fresh. And to be honest,
you did a great job.
I love it.
Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
You've inspired me. Now maybe I'm not gonna cut it, but maybe I'll come to the show with cornrows. Maybe you never know. I might switch things up. You've inspired me now.
I mean, you've been mixing it up.
Yeah, but I might like just do like a whole, you never know.
Like a whole thing.
Just like a, you know? I don't know. I still like it for now. Natalie, thank you so much for joining me on the show. Absolute pleasure seeing you again. Make sure to watch The Invitation. It's going to be exclusively in theaters on August 26th. Natalie Emanuel, everybody. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. Thank you again.
Jump into the epic world of Avatar: The Last Airbender
with Nickelodeon's official companion podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Listen to Avatar: Braving the Elements on Apple Podcasts
or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, that's our show for tonight. But before we go, please consider supporting JuPayGo, right? They're an organization that helps deliver healthcare to women around the world, whether it's training doctors on family health, educating women on planned parenting, or building new systems to get women's healthcare to impoverished communities. So if you want to help them guarantee healthier futures for women and their families, then you can donate at the link below. Until next time, stay safe out there. And remember, if Marjorie Taylor Greene visits you in prison... You're probably not in prison. Just go home.
Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central. And stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Take The Dress. Most people remember it as an optical illusion that went viral, asking everyone on the planet, is this dress blue and black or white and gold? Turns out, that story was way bigger than just an optical illusion. It's a cautionary tale about the decline of clickbait sites, the rise of algorithms and internet polarization, and the end of fun on the internet. Seriously, and that's just one story. We're giving every character their 16th minute. So listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Survivor's back, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. And we have a twist, a new co-host, the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares.
Hi!
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.